Let me invite you to open your Bibles to the book of Ruth, and it's over near the first part of the Old Testament, right after Judges, the book of Ruth. It's a short little book, and it is one of two Old Testament books that bears the name of a woman, the other one being that of Esther. It's a rags-to-riches story, and we all love rags-to-riches stories, and we love love stories, and it's a classic love story as well. So I think we're going to enjoy going through this. We're going to move through it fairly quickly in just 4 weeks, so there's a chapter a week as we move through the book of Ruth. It's set during the time of the judges. And you remember some of those judges like Samson and Gideon and others. It was a rough and tumble time in the history of Israel. It's been compared to the Wild West days of our own nation. And these were hard times for many people. There was a lot of foreign oppression. The Philistines were coming in to do battle, and the other nations were coming in to do battle. And it was a time of spiritual and moral degeneracy, and the Israelites were not at their best during this period. In fact, if you'll look above Ruth chapter 1, look back to the very last verse of the book of Judges, and that sets the tone for this story and the time period of this story. There in Judges chapter 21, verse 25, it says, "In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as he saw fit." Tough times, hard times for Israel, and doubly so for the family that we're about to be introduced to here in the opening verses of chapter 1 of Ruth. It begins with the story of a Jewish family, and this family consisted of a husband and wife, Elimelech and Naomi, and they had two boys, Mahlon and Chilion. And they lived in the little town of Bethlehem, long before Bethlehem ever was noted for anything of any great importance. And the problem that existed during this period is there in that southern region south of Jerusalem, they were experiencing a very severe famine. Read with me, if you will, the first two verses. "In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there." This small family lived in tough times. They were faced with a tough decision once the famine became severe. And some of you have been in very similar situations. This was an economic crisis that they were facing. It was a hard time, and because of that hard time financially, they were going to have to do something differently than what they'd been accustomed to doing. Did you know every decision that you make in life narrows your options? It's like the roads that you see here behind me. If you decide that you're going to take the left lane, then that closes off all future possibilities that could occur had you taken the other road, and vice versa. So as we travel through life, we make decisions. And with every decision we make, we close off all the other options. You young people are going to decide where you want to go to college. Wherever you decide to go to college, more than likely, that's where you're going to find your mate for life. Once you choose a career, that's going to determine many things in life. With every choice, our focus becomes more and more narrow. Now, there's no problem with that as long as our choices are good choices. But if they're bad choices, then that narrows them in the wrong way. They had to make a choice, this family, and that's why it is so important in the early stages of choices that are made to be sure that your choices are good choices and not bad. Your life will ultimately become the sum total of every choice that you made, good or bad. Now, Elimelech made a decision. He made that decision for his family, and he came home and he said, "Mom, pack the bags, get the boys ready, we're moving. We're leaving Bethlehem because of the famine, and we are going to Moab." Now, I don't know what kind of discussion they had that night around the dinner table, but Moab is not the ideal location for anyone who is an Israelite. It's on the other side of the Dead Sea from Bethlehem, and Moab started badly. I don't know if you remember the origins of the Moabite people, but that whole group of people came from an incestuous relationship between Lot and his daughters. Their descendants became the Moabite nation. And the Moabite nation was at odds with Israel. They became the enemies of Israel. Look back up over to Deuteronomy, back up a few chapters here. Deuteronomy chapter 23, and notice what the instructions are that are given to the Israelites about people from Moab. Deuteronomy chapter 23, beginning down in verse 3. "No Ammonite or Moabite," that's the Moabites we're looking at, "or any of his descendants may enter the assembly of the Lord, even down to the tenth generation, for they did not come to meet you with bread and water on your way when you came out of Egypt, and they hired Balaam the son of Beor from Pethor and Aram Naharaim to pronounce a curse on you. However, the Lord your God would not listen to Balaam, but turned the curse into a blessing for you, because the Lord your God loves you. Do not seek a treaty of friendship with them as long as you live." God says, stay away from those Moabites. They will only do you harm. When you came out of Egypt, they were not your friends. They were your enemies. They tried to mislead you. Their prophet tried to mislead you. Stay away from them. You know, it's like when you're growing up and your mother says, you stay away from that boy that lives down the street, or you stay away from that girl over there. That they know the story. They know what's going to happen. And so God warns them, stay away from those people, because that will only cause you heartache and trouble. And yet, Elimelech says, pack the bags, we're moving to Moab. I wonder if Naomi said, no, we can't do that. God's warned us about that. We can't put our boys in jeopardy by moving there and raising them. Those people are pagans. They don't even believe in the God, same God we believe in. I don't know what kind of discussion took place, but in the end, they moved to Moab. Lock, stock, and barrel. Off they went. Now, I don't know what was said, like I mentioned, but I wonder if a clue to it is there in the last part of verse 1, because it says that together with his wife and two sons, they went to live for a while in the country of Moab. Maybe Elimelech said, it's not going to last. It's just a short time. Once the famine's over, we can go home, but we've got to make a living, and let's just go there for a short time. That's not going to hurt anybody or anything. He never would have imagined that one short-term decision would turn into the rest of his life. And not only his, but the rest of his sons' lives. They would live and they would die in the land of Moab. Read verse 3 and following. "Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons." Surprise, surprise, look what happened. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. A short-term solution turned into a long-term nightmare. There's no Jewish mother that would have wished that outcome for her family. Now let me share several truths about the choices we have to make in life. We're going to come to forks in the road, and we're going to have to decide, will I take the right fork or the left fork? Will I go this way or will I go that way? Will I decide to do this or will I decide to do that? First thing is obvious, and that is God let you do that. even if it's wrong. God will let you choose to do anything you want to do. Now, your mom and dad may not, but you guys are going to be away from mom and dad in just a few years, and you can do anything you want to do. You can choose. You can do anything you want to do. God's not going to stop you. He's not going to block your path. He will let you choose anything that you want to choose. God said earlier to the Israelites, I have set before you blessing and cursing, life and death. Now choose. And He gave them absolute free rein to make such a choice. Now, while that's true, there's another little part that we often forget. While you're free to choose, you are not free to choose the consequences of your choices. I can choose to stick, a hairpin in a electrical outlet, but I am not free to make a choice when that electricity connects to me. The laws of nature take over at that point, and I've got to live with the consequences of that choice. I can't make any other choices beyond that. You move your family to a pagan nation, and more than likely, your children will marry someone from that pagan nation. That's exactly what happened here. There's a passage, and Elvis Denny used to share this with the young people in this congregation, and he challenged my girls, and they memorized this passage out of Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verses 9 and 10. And it says, be happy, young man, while you're young. Let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. If you're young, you need to be happy. And let your heart be happy. And then he goes on to say, follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. Do you know the Bible said that? Bible says, when you're young, be happy. Do whatever you want to do. Follow your eyes wherever they go. Have at it. But then there's a little end on that verse. It says, but know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. There's a price tag on every choice we make. Some price tags are wonderful, and we're glad to pay the price. Others have a price that are so high we never knew what the charges would be. There are always consequences with our decisions. Vicki and I spent 10 years in Ireland. Our oldest daughter, Kelly, was up in school. She was beginning to go to classes, and she was beginning to be influenced religiously in a way that we did not want her to be influenced, and that was one of the major factors in our decision to return back to the States. We came back to Memphis, Tennessee, and I went to graduate school there, but we'd researched the community and the churches before we ever came. After I finished that, we ended up moving to Springfield, Missouri, but not before we came here and before we visited and before we asked our girls, what do you think about this church and how do you like this? And in every decision we made throughout our lives, preeminent in that decision was, how will this affect our family spiritually? I don't think Elimelech ever paused to ask that question. How will this affect my family spiritually when we move to Moab? There's another truth about decisions, and this is even when you make wrong decisions. And the truth of the matter is, we all do. You can't get through life without making some bad decisions, poor decisions, decisions that you're going to regret. And the other truth is this, it's never too late to make a right decision when you've made a wrong decision. You can make things right. You can change things many times. Look what happens down here in verses 6 and 7. It says, now Naomi's out here in Moab. Her husband died. Her sons have died. And it says, when she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of His people by providing food for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Here she is, ready to reverse the direction that she and her family had taken over 10 years previous. She decides to go back home and live out the remainder of her life among the people of God in the land that God had given to the Israelites. Now, there's an old country song that says, "It's a little too late to do the right thing now." You ever heard that song? Those make good country lyrics, but that's not good theology. God never has said it's a little too late to do the right thing now. As long as there is life, you can still do the right thing. It's never too late to do the right thing. I don't care how deeply you're entangled in some mess. If you'll turn around and begin to move in the right direction and take the right road again, God will often redeem a horrible situation. God can do amazing things with the worst messes that we can ever get ourselves into. Well, it was too late for Elimelech and for Mahlon and for Chilion, but it wasn't too late for Naomi. No, it's never too late to do the right thing. Some of you made decisions for Jesus Christ early in your life. I did. I was 13 years old when I became a Christian. Some of you were not saved until late in life. A few here. But you know, Jesus told a parable about workers that went out at different times of the day in the vineyard. And he said the ones who went out late in the day got the same pay as those who went out and bore the heat of the day, worked all day long. It's never too late to do the right thing. God can redeem many a bad situation with just one good decision on the part of that person who's ready to do what's right. Now, there's still consequences for earlier bad decisions. Naomi is going to have a wonderful ending to this story, but she still lost her husband. She still lost her boys. God can redeem bad decisions. Look at Saul. Saul was going the wrong way, doing the wrong thing. He stood there as Stephen was stoned and gave approval to that horrible murder of an innocent man. And for the rest of his life, he had to remember that. That must have haunted him at night sometimes as he lay in bed. But he made a change and he began to go in another direction. And God used him and blessed him. No, God can redeem bad decisions. In Joel chapter 2 and verse 25, God said through that prophet, "I will repay you for the years the locusts have eaten." And some of you have had some locust-eaten years in your life. But God has blessed you, and God has helped you as you've moved in the right direction. Now, two more decisions were made here, and I want to finish with these here before we're done. Look in verse 8, Ruth chapter 1, down in verse 8. "Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, 'Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dad and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband.' And then she kissed them, and they wept aloud and said to her, 'We will go back with you to your people.' But Naomi said, 'Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me.' At this they wept again. And then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. 'Look,' said Naomi, 'your sister-in-law is going back to her people and to her gods. Go back with her.' But Ruth replied, 'Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me.' And when Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her." Those girls had two roads before them. One road went off to the land of the Moabites, but the other road went to the promised land, the land that God had given to his people, the land flowing with milk and honey. And this leads us to the final truth about choice. If you'll just make one big choice early on, then you don't have to make a whole bunch of little bitty choices. One big choice will take care of a multitude of other choices that you're going to face later in life. I became a Christian when I was 13 years old. And I didn't have to make a whole bunch of other decisions at any point beyond that through my life. That saved me having to make all kinds of decisions. I didn't have to decide whether I was going to go with a bunch of my buddies to the bar and get drunk, because I made a decision when I was 13 years old that I wanted to serve the Lord. I didn't have to make all kinds of decisions about wild parties and goings on and girls and all kinds of decisions that a lot of my friends struggled with, because I had made one big decision right up front. And that saved me from having to wrestle again and again and again with all these smaller decisions. You see, Ruth made a decision that was a life-changing decision. Her life forever would be altered by choosing that one road, by choosing to go with her mother-in-law back to the land of Israel. Before we close, look at one last passage. Turn over to Matthew chapter 1. Matthew chapter 1. This is the part of the Bible that no one ever reads. If you're doing your daily Bible reading, most of you just skip over this part, but we want to read it right now. Matthew chapter 1. A record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac, the father of Jacob. Jacob, the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah, the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Perez, the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram, the father of Amminadab. Amminadab, the father of Nahshon. Nahshon, the father of Salmon. Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. There she is. That one decision, that one road she took, changed things forever. And she had a little boy named Obed, who was the father of Jesse. And Jesse was the father of King David. Ruth was the great-grandmother of King David because of a choice she made early in life. She is today in the lineage of Jesus Christ, one of his ancestors. And let me tell you, when you choose God, when you choose Jesus, your life will be altered in a way that you can never imagine. And one day when the history books are written and when you stand in eternity, you can look back and you can see clearly that trajectory that one choice for Jesus Christ has made throughout all the days of your life. No, choices are so critically important. And I'm so grateful that God's given us a choice. And I'm grateful that we're here in a group of people who are making the choice by the way they live to serve God, to be among His people. If tonight we can help you in any way, you know we're only too glad always to do that. If you need to come, we invite you to do that as we stand and sing.